Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. While pursuing a race for prosecuting attorney in Arkansas in the 1970s, Roger Glasgow had run afoul of the local political machine. The machine later decided to teach him a lesson, even though he'd lost the race. Down and Dirty Down South is the story of how he attempted to clear his name, also track down the people who had him set up for the charges of smuggling illegal drugs into the United States. With a Bachelor of Science degree in History and Political Science and a Juris Doctor, he entered private practice at Nashville, Arkansas for a few years, also served as deputy prosecutor, elected as a delegate by the Arkansas Constitutional Convention in 1969. He then moved to Little Rock, where he was a deputy attorney general before he ran for prosecuting attorney, finishing second in a field of four. He re-entered private practice with the Little Rock law firm of Wright, Lindsay, and Jennings, where he enjoyed a successful 50-year career as a trial lawyer. On retirement, he turned to writing, broadsword a novel of love amidst the chaos, published last year, his debut novel. We talked about it on This Week in America. And back with us is Roger Glasgow, author of Down and Dirty Down South, Politics and the Art of Revenge, recipient, by the way, of an Arkansas Gem Award from the Arkansas Library Association. Roger Glasgow, back with us. Roger, a pleasure. Thank you for coming back on the program.
Hey, Rick, good to see you again. I enjoyed our last visit and glad to have you back.
It is a delight to be back to talk about this book. And we touched on it briefly the last time, and you indicated you were getting close to publishing the book. Talk about the inspiration, the motivation for writing this story. It's a great story. Some people say it's a great mystery, but it's your story. Talk about writing this and what went into it.
Well, it's a memoir of sorts. I say of sorts because most memoirs, you know, the author writes about most of their life or at least a good part of their life. But the seminal event in this story took just a tiny little slice out of my life. But boy, it was a whopper of a slice. The fallout was harrowing, to say the least. I can tell you a story about it if you want to hear more.
Please do, yes.
Well, it's kind of a long story. I'll try to condense it a little bit. When I graduated law school, I went back to my hometown in Nashville, Arkansas, which is down in the southwest part of the state, small town in a rural community. I was raised on a farm, and I do cover most of my early background in this book. After I returned to Nashville, I joined practice with a lawyer that lived in Nashville and had practiced down there for a good while. And he was instrumental in getting me appointed deputy prosecuting attorney in a couple of counties. So I tried a good number of cases, but these were not the caliber of cases that you would find in a large city like Little Rock, Arkansas, the state's capital. These were cases like moonshining and spotlighting deer yes. and defacing state parks and such as that. So I was kind of naive and not really prepared for what I encountered when I ran for prosecuting attorney up here. But to go forward with the story, I ran for the Constitutional Convention down in Nashville. Representing two counties. It met in Little Rock in the legislative chambers, and my seatmate was a man named Ray Thornton. And he was a well-known guy. He was a very nice guy, and he was a nephew of Whit Stevens and Jack Stevens, who were very wealthy and powerful people in Arkansas, or were at the time. They both passed away. But he told me he was going to run for attorney general, and he might be back in touch with me if he won. So he did, and he did get back in touch with me, and he asked me, did I want to come to Little Rock and be his chief deputy prosecuting attorney general? So let me continue with this a little bit. He decided after one term to run for Congress. And he wondered, did I want to come up and be his administrative assistant in Washington, D.C.? I'd been to Washington, D.C. for a couple of summers working on the mall at the Smithsonian Institution, which was a wonderful experience.
Oh,
but
yes.
I did not want to tie my wagon, I decided, to that of a politician who has to run for re-election every so often.
Yes.
So I decided to go out on my own, and the prosecuting attorney's office here came open, and it covers metropolitan Little Rock and another county. So I got in the race, and three more people got in the race, and two of them were long-term established attorneys in Little Rock, and they were the favorites. And a guy named Lee Munson got in the race, and I didn't know Lee very well, but it turned out that he was connected. He was the candidate put in by a cabal of people here in Little Rock who had controlled the prosecuting attorney's office for many years.
Interesting, yes.
And they needed that because they were committing a lot of crimes. And I'm talking about high-level people, the mayor of Little Rock, the police chief, his primary lieutenants, the criminal division judges of the courts. So I did not know what kind of a thing I was getting into. I was a little naive. Sure wasn't like back in Nashville, Arkansas.
Yes.
But anyway, there was a first primary. The two favorites lost and they were out of the race. And it was between Lee Munson and myself. So I began to creep up on him because I was running ads, and all the papers endorsed me, the three major papers in this county. All the political organizations endorsed me. The two men that had lost in the first primary endorsed me. Nobody endorsed him, so my poll numbers were going up, and his were going down. And I'm sure he was getting nervous, and his supporters were getting nervous because they sure couldn't afford to lose the prosecuting attorney's office.
Yeah, exactly.
We moved toward election day, and he did a really, really foolish thing that I think hurt him badly. He went out on his own by himself with a big roll of money and started paying off my poll place workers.
Oh.
In other words, you know, if you go to a poll, there'll be some people out there holding up signs,
yes,
for the various candidates and handing out cards and so forth. So he would go and threaten them or pay them $5 to give him the material, and then they would have to leave. He would run them off from the polling place. Well, he got caught. A man named Robert Johnson, who was a professor of political science at University of Arkansas Little Rock, saw him and didn't like that at all, and tipped off the press, and they caught him and didn't like it at all. And so the next morning he had won barely, but boy, did a storm blow up on him for what he had done. There were calls for his resignation, calls for a grand jury investigation, calls for a recount and all kinds of things. So he disappeared for quite a while, laying low, you know.
Yes.
And I'd lost the race, and I didn't really particularly want to stay involved in it. So since my stock had risen, I got some really nice job offers. The governor of the state of Arkansas, who was Dale Bumpers at the time, offered me the position of insurance commissioner for the state. And the two largest, most prominent law firms in Little Rock offered me positions, and I took one of them. And then there was a space of time between when I left the AG's office and was to start the new job at Wright Lindsey Jennings that my wife and I decided to take a short trip. She had a niece that lived down in Corpus Christi, Texas. And we'd been down to visit with them before, and they talked all the time about how nice the interior of Mexico was and that we should take this time to go down and visit. So we did. And we went down to Monterey and came back up to Matamoros, which is right on the border, and stayed in our last night in the Holiday Inn that was right next to the International Bridge. Got up the next morning, dressed, put our stuff in the car, drove to the International Bridge. Most of the other cars that were going back into the U.S. were just moving along. They were waving them on in.
Yes.
But when they got to us, they, strangely enough, said, you need to pull over. So we pulled over on a ramp. A couple of big old burly guys came out of the office there of the customs police and told us to get out of the car. We got out. Next thing I knew, they had the back seat out, flipped it over on a metal table. It was full of packages wrapped in Mexican newspapers about the size of a small loaf of bread, and they were crammed up in the cavity where the springs are.
Wow.
And I looked at that and I went, oh,
yep,
that does
trouble.
Not look good.
That is trouble you're looking at.
That's trouble, I figured, and I had a pretty good idea what it probably was. And one of them took out a knife, opened it up, and sure enough, a green leafy substance that turned out to be 24 pounds of marijuana. So we had parked our car in an unlighted parking lot at the back of the motel where they assigned us the room, and I have no doubt whatever, and subsequently it was we determined that they just got in the car back there in the dark and had plenty of time, and we were in our room asleep, and they got the seat out, filled it up with the marijuana, a very unwanted cargo from my standpoint.
Well, yeah, to bring it back.
I don't know if
States.
They wanted this to retrieve it over the border, or did they want me to be arrested. I think they wanted me to be arrested and charged with smuggling illegal drugs into the United States, which is what happened.
You know,
so these were my political opponents, and they were trying to teach me a lesson, it turns out, and they were trying to make it where I could never run again for political office.
Yes.
And they wanted me to lose my license to practice law and to go to prison. That was their aim.
That's just an amazing story, and it's all in Roger's book, Down and Dirty, Down South. The book is available Amazon, wherever books are sold. Roger Glasgow is our guest and the author, Glasgow. If you're Googling to find it, and you can link on directly by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. So finishing second in the race, you think this is all over with, and suddenly they've got you on drug smuggling charges.
Suddenly, boy, the unexpected. It happened.
Well, yeah, and the time is going by so quickly, and we want people to buy the book because it really is a compelling story that you tell so well. What was this battle like then for the next couple of years in dealing? I mean, your life is upside down after it was going in pretty good shape there.
Well, it actually didn't harm my legal practice. I mean, the firm kept me on, and I went up the chain of command, so to speak, just like any associate attorney would.
Yes.
I ended up doing trial work, and mostly I represented large corporations out of state, and so they had never heard of this deal, and they didn't care about it anyway. They just wanted a good lawyer, which I proudly think I was a fairly good lawyer because I had a lot of out-of-state clients. I got into product liability defense, including automobiles, tractors, agricultural implements, medical equipment, and some big high-level stuff. So for 50 years I did that. And the one thing that this experience did do for me, which was really fortunate, as a matter of fact, was I was completely cured of any aspirations to run for political office again.
You returned to your sanity because of that. That would have a tendency to do that, and that was going to put the political career in your rearview mirror. You know, you mentioned some names during the course of the interview. In the book, you're very honest, and you mentioned names there as well. Any retaliation, any blowback for writing this book from the people that might be impacted?
Well, you know, back at the time, I got a good number of calls, death threats, hang-up calls, that sort of thing. I had my dad's old Remington double barrel 12-gauge shotgun, so I bought me some shells and put it under the bed just in case. But I never had a problem like that. And by the time I wrote this book, you know, I'd kept all the clippings and the editorial endorsements and the investigation reports and the polygraph test results and so forth. So I had the story pretty well documented, and I had determined way back then that if I ever got a chance to do it, I was going to write a book about that because I wanted the people who were involved. Some of them had already been exposed, but most of them had not. And so I exposed them in the book. I called, I pointed fingers and called names. But I didn't really get any blowback much from that. I got a little bit, but very little, you know.
The book is such an exciting read to see what you're going through and all of the circumstances that led up to this point and what you went through to bounce back from this and did, as you say, a 50-year illustrious legal career. The book, Down and Dirty, Down South, Roger Glasgow, our guest on the program. A few minutes left in the program. You were here a year ago to talk about Broadsword, a novel of love amidst the chaos. Talk about a little bit, in a few minutes, where that story came from, that particular piece of history, the 1500s, and how you came up with that.
The setting in that book is Ayrshire, just south of Glasgow, Scotland. And that's where my ancient ancestors came from, which, you know, you might expect since my name is Glasgow.
Yes.
And it's spelled the same way. So I always suspected that's where they came from. My sister, who got really interested in genealogical research, did a lot of research and found out, that they came from that area. And we found there are not a whole lot of records, but we found some, found out where they lived. There were some tax records called the hearth taxes that were based on the, if you had one hearth, it cost less than if you had two hearths, for example. That's your fireplace, you know.
Oh, yes, yes.
So my family had two hearths, so they were more well-to-do than the average person. And they were the laird of this estate. But I just invented it, and I picked that time period because so many interesting things were happening, such as, you know, the Protestant Reformation, the Renaissance, King Henry VIII and his wives, his rough wooing wars against Scotland, just all kinds of things. And I thought if I could imagine some characters and weave a story around the historical events, it would make a pretty good book. And I did that, and Broadsword was the result of that. And it has won an international award, the Pinnacle Award for Excellence in Writing.
Fantastic. Well deserved.
Which I was very proud of.
And you should be.
And I've written a sequel to that, which if we have enough time, you might want to hear a little bit about it.
Touch that a couple minutes and let's do that, because I was going to say when we talked the last time, I think we mentioned, boy, that this has sequel written all over it. And I was curious to find out if, in fact, there would be. And I'm finding out there will be.
Yes. The sequel, and I've finished it, and I've had my editor has gone over it, and I've done some more work on it. And Jennifer's reading it right now to polish it up or help me polish it up. Jennifer's my wife, as you know. It's named Sea Serpent, and that's actually the name of a ship that I've invented and put in the book. But the word sea serpent comes from St. Patrick, who came to Ireland way back in the 1000s and before as a Christian missionary. He was a Catholic monk. And he ended up in this place where I put a pirate queen, and one of my main characters goes down there on this ship and meets the pirate queen. She shows him a mountain called Crow Patrick. And this is a mountain that Patrick supposedly climbed, and there was a serpent up there that bit him. And he, being a man of God, of course, he didn't affect him that much, but he didn't appreciate being bit by a serpent. So he cast all the serpents in Ireland out into the sea. And so I thought, well, that would make a good name for my, for the ship. And so there's a lot of other things that go on in the story, but it's a follow up to Broadsword. The same characters move forward in their lives. Fantastic. They have children. They die. They have battles. They have love lives and all of that. So it's a very interesting book. And it will be, I think we'll have it published sometime this spring.
That's fantastic. And hopefully we'll be able to talk about that as well. Sea Serpent. Now, Roger's first book, Broadsword, still available. You can find that Amazon, the usual places. The new book, the memoir, the crime thriller, Down and Dirty, Down South, Politics and the Art of Revenge by Robert Glasgow, our guest on the program. And that's Glasgow. And you'll Google that. You'll find all the information. And go to our website, and you can link on directly and get information on the book. Roger, it is always a pleasure. I was looking forward to this. A fascinating story of what you went through. We mentioned it in the last program, and I was waiting for the book to come out. So it's here, and people can read that story. And hopefully we'll talk about Sea Serpent coming up here in the coming months. Thank you for being with us on the program today. It is always fun. Thank you. Congratulations on the awards, on your book. And we look forward to more.
Yeah, very good being with you again, Rick. I enjoyed it.
Thank you. It is our pleasure. And the book is, once again, Down and Dirty, Down South, Politics and the Art of Revenge. Robert Glasgow, our guest on the program. Information on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. We're back after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.